Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision with Gregory Nielsen. My name is Gregory Nielsen. I'm the president and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit leaders and organizations to translate vision into reality in the areas of governance, strategic planning, and performance evaluation and measurement. Today, I am pleased to be joined by my friend, Stephen Shattuck. Stephen is the Chief Engagement Officer at a company that I have known for a while and have a lot of respect for called Bloomerang. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. If you could maybe tell us a little bit briefly about Bloomerang.
Yeah, well, thanks for the shout out. We're a donor management software application, all cloud-based, really good for small and medium-sized nonprofits. We kind of hang our hat on measuring donor retention and donor engagement as kind of the most important things that we look for in a database. So if you're interested in maybe knowing a little bit more about the donors in your list, I would check out Bloomerang because it's really good for holding on to the donors you already have and also sort of enhancing the engagement that they have with you through further volunteerism or major gifts and lifetime value ultimately.
And Stephen, before we get into your background and some of the fundraising and donor retention topics we wanted to talk about today, one of the things I've always respected about Bloomerang is it feels like it meets a need that a lot of my clients articulate, which is how do we better understand our donors and how do we have a solution for our organization that's flexible, that doesn't have a whole bunch of features that we may not need, but is robust enough to meet our needs that we do have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. When we started the company back in 2012, that was really sort of the gap that we saw in the marketplace. I mean, there's a lot of really good software out there. And I don't mind saying that. I mean, we get along pretty well with our competitors and collaborate on a lot of different things. But it's a really good fit for an organization that maybe gets priced out of sort of the enterprise level products that, like you said, have way more bells and whistles than they would ever use and don't really need to pay for. And it's a very modern and easy to use system. I know everybody says that their system is easy to use and most are. But someone who is maybe new to fundraising, or if it's their first database product, like if they're coming off of something like Excel, they can get up and running really quickly and be doing really cool things. And I think the other piece that you nailed is most databases are really sort of passive, right? They're just kind of this big bucket of names and their data collection systems, which is good and important, but we try to tell you about the donors in your system. Like, hey, this person may be in danger of lapsing. You might want to give them a little more stewardship. Or, hey, this person, they've been giving for a long time. They haven't been giving a lot, so maybe they wouldn't necessarily show up on your radar, but they do other things and the frequency that they give, hey, this might be a really good person to ask for more money or maybe think about putting them into like a moves management process because they have the capacity to give more. So we like to say that it's a proactive system that can kind of guide your fundraising efforts rather than just being this, passive bucket of names and addresses.
Right. Now, many of our podcast listeners may be aware of you. You're obviously a thought leader in many topics around nonprofit leadership, and also a frequent conference speaker and writer. But talk to us a little bit about what you do at Bloomerang as the Chief Engagement Officer.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about education. We spend most, if not all, of our marketing budget on providing and producing and curating good advice, honestly, is the way we look at it. We were kind of the new kid on the block of a few years ago, 6 years ago, if you're listening to this in 2019. And we didn't want to just kind of flood the airwaves with a bunch of advertisements saying, we're the best system, we're the CRM you should look at. We kind of said, hey, our mission is to help the sector. And our software doesn't have to be the only way we do that. So I spend my day curating our blog. We have a weekly webinar series that I host. Actually, I just jumped off of today's session. It's every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern if you want to check it out. And we are collecting, guest blog posts from really smart people. Greg, I think you've written on our blog a couple of times. We love it.
I've got some great feedback and engagement from
it. So we just want to help people. We know that not everyone is shopping for a CRM, you know, right now, but we still want to help nonprofits, 364 days out of the year, not just the day that they're shopping. So that's what we do in marketing. You know, there's not so much of the traditional kind of marketing things that we do here. That's kind of why I don't have marketing in my title. But yeah, we love to go out there and share kind of research that we either produce ourselves or help fund. And just kind of the things that we see work among our customer base that we want people to know about, you know, regardless of what system they use. You know, you don't usually don't need Bloomerang to do the kinds of things that we recommend in terms of stewardship best practices and all the things that you read about and hear about at conferences. So we love the sector and we want to help it through multiple different means, not just our software.
I want to come back in a little bit to what you touched on, which is some hot topics and trends around donor retention and in your work in that capacity. But first, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background. How did you get where you are today at Bloomerang? What's kind of been your leadership journey?
Well, it's kind of funny because I never aspired as maybe a high school or college student to enter the nonprofit sector, although my wife did. She has been a fundraiser and a nonprofit publicist for her entire career and always wanted to be, but I kind of fell into the nonprofit sector, which always sort of annoys her, although we get to talk shop at home, which is fun. But I was a film student. I dropped out of film school. I went and got my degree in creative writing. And not a lot of job prospects available to me if you are a fellow, you know, maybe liberal arts major and millennial, maybe you can commiserate with that. But I actually got my first job at a marketing agency, which just so happened to almost exclusively serve the nonprofit sector. They specialized in making fundraising videos. So the kinds of video that you would maybe show at a black tie gala, you know, something to get people's tears flowing and their checkbooks out on the table. And that was kind of my introduction to the fundraising world. So I did a lot of those kinds of videos. I did some capital campaign videos. Back then, we were still mailing DVDs out to major gift prospects, which was
Those days.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, actually. And I
it's amazing how quickly things have changed.
Right, and it's actually probably still really effective. To do that for certain types of donors. So I kind of cut my teeth there, you know, learned storytelling, learned, you know, the basic tenets of fundraising. And I ended up meeting Jay Love, who is the founder of Bloomerang. And some of you may recognize him as he also founded eTapestry back in the 90s before it was acquired by Blackbaud. And he and I were working at a different marketing agency that didn't serve nonprofits. And we were both there sort of temporarily. And he and I kind of bonded over the fact that we were both out of the sector for basically the first time in our careers, which was funny that we bonded because he was in leadership and I was kind of in a lower level position than he was. But when he left to start Bloomerang, he kind of knew that I had that passion and he asked me to come along. And that was, that was about our first year in business. And, you know, 6 years later, we're still cranking. So.
And no regrets about dedicating yourself to the nonprofit sector.
I love it. You feel good, you know, when you go home at the end of the day. Not that under other industries that you should feel bad about, certainly, but, you know, knowing that you help some folks doing good in the world is really rewarding.
And your wife, you mentioned, is also in the nonprofit space as a fundraiser herself?
Yeah, she more specializes in sort of the media relations and earned media side. So she was the communications director for the Alzheimer's Association chapter here in Indy. We just had our second kid, so she has actually transitioned to the consulting side. And she has a client that she's at right now, actually. They're a breast milk bank. Great organization. And she's running an event for them. She's running a drive for them today and getting all the local media out to get the word out about all the great stuff they do. So we're kind of a fundraising family, which is fun.
You know, fundraising is one of those areas of nonprofit leadership where in some ways a million things have changed in recent years. And in some ways it's still it still comes down to the same key principles in relationships. How would you assess during your time as a nonprofit leader, how have things changed and what are some of the things that have been constant through the years?
Yeah, well, you know, the things that haven't changed, I think, are, you know, the stewardship and donor centricity and, you know, doing a really good job acknowledging donations and thanking people and building up those relationships. And I think that any new technology or trend or software or, you know, app or whatever, I think has to help that side of it, right? For it to be really useful. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that are cool, but I sometimes worry that maybe they distract us from the things that are really, really important, like, you know, thanking donors, which seems sort of obvious, but can sometimes kind of get lost in the shuffle of, you know, social media and mobile giving and text to give and AI and all these things that we get bombarded with at, you know, conferences and the advertisements we see. And all that stuff is good and can be useful, but not if it supersedes, like you said, what has always, always worked. The stewardship piece, you know, a clear case for support, a compelling case statement. That stuff I don't think will ever change. And people don't give for different reasons than they did, you know, hundreds of years ago. And nonprofits were raising millions of dollars back before, you know, the internet and social media and all these awesome tools that we have today. I don't think they're necessarily going to be game changers for us, but they can definitely enhance those sort of time tested and time honored traditions that get people to give and keep them giving.
It's amazing because it seems like, you know, some of the tools of the trade have changed, right? We have mobile giving now, we have different apps and technology, but they're all in service to the same principle, which is how do we build a relationship with someone who may care about the mission of the organization? Yeah,
exactly. They should be. Sometimes they get in the way, right? They maybe supersede or distract from those activities, like, you know, making time to call a donor and making time to write handwritten notes. But as long as you sort of keep what's important at the forefront, technology can really be your friend and really aid you.
Right. A lot of the work that I do is with boards and around understanding their vital role in fundraising and resource development. And it always amazes me, you know, when you ask that initial question of board members around their level of comfort with fundraising, everyone immediately jumps to the ask. And you hear things like, I don't do fundraising, or I don't like fundraising. I don't want to ask my friends or coworkers,
right,
or family members, even worse, for money. But as you rightly pointed out, this is about building relationships, and there are a number of different stages to fundraising, from cultivation to stewardship, thanking folks. Talk about, you know, what your sense of the landscape is in terms of how organizations are most effectively communicating the broad definition of fundraising.
Well, I think it's catching on. You know, there's a lot of people out there talking about donor centricity and stewardship and writing about it and speaking about it. And I think people I get the sense that maybe people are fatigued with all of the sort of bombardment of applications and technology out there. And it sort of feels like maybe the pendulum is kind of swinging back, which I'm really excited about, towards, hey, you know, maybe we should carve out some time to just write some thank you notes. Like, and it's sort of, these things seem like sort of novel ideas, but they were, you know, common practices, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So I think things are getting better, even though we are sort of in this technological renaissance where there's, you know, amazing things out there, like AI can tell you, you know, who your best donor is or donor prospect is. And we have all these wealth screening tools, but I feel really confident that people are starting to catch on. You know, I see conferences wholly devoted to stewardship and donor love. I mean, there's a conference series out there that's really good. That's literally called the Donor Love Conference. So I feel like we're kind of getting the ship righted a little bit. If you agree that maybe we got knocked off course over the last few years in this sort of, it's kind of a technological adolescence, maybe is the right way to say it.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, you mentioned the board, and I think the board is like a vastly underutilized tool for all this stuff, to be calling donors to say thank you. I mean, there's tons of research out there. Penelope Burke comes to mind. You know, her research says that, you know, if board members are the ones calling donors and saying thank you, and I'm kind of paraphrasing and generalizing, you should check out her research for sure. But that really has a positive effect in terms of retention rates and how much they give in the future. So if maybe your board is struggling, just as an aside, you know, maybe get them involved in the appreciation rather than the actual appeals.
You're right. And the boards that I work with, it's a great entry point for board members into the fundraising cycle. And it builds some momentum too. So the most successful, most effective boards that I work with, they celebrate progress together. And so, you know, having board members engage in those stewardship phone calls and those thank you phone calls and notes gives them something to talk about at the next board meeting, and allows the board team to celebrate moving forward together.
Yeah. And if you've done a good job onboarding a board member, they're going to be able to speak to your mission, right? They're I assume going to be passionate about it if they are a board member and taking up their time to volunteer for you. I mean, who better to be an ambassador to say thank you and to talk about the reasons why they also support the mission as well as the donor. So, you know, utilize those board members. You know, definitely get the governance down. I think the governance is the most important thing, but maybe also lean on them for the stewardship piece too.
Right. Well, Stephen, we're recording this podcast at the end of January, and yes. I know anyone who's listening has probably gone through that holiday rush where they are inundated with both donation requests and annual letters and annual fund appeal. And I know that's an area that you've done some work in. Talk to us a little bit about how those end of the year appeals factor into fundraising, and then maybe as an entry point, some of the work that you're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, right now, hopefully folks are sort of in appreciation mode, right? It's been, you know, 3 weeks since New Year's Eve. You probably got a lot of donations in December if you did those year-end appeals. Don't sleep on these, you know, next couple of weeks. Hopefully you've already gotten those thank yous out in the mail. But you know, there's so much research out there that says, you know, the faster you thank a donor, the higher likelihood it is that they're going to be able to, that they're going to want to give again. So the window, maybe the best window has already shut. But this is sort of the time to really be revamping or to be focusing on the acknowledgements and also revamping, honestly, if maybe you're using the same thank you letter that you've always used, or maybe have been using for the last couple of years. Like, this is maybe a really good time to refresh those things. And first time donors, if you got new donors at year end, I would not be afraid to ask them for that second gift really, you know, pretty quickly. I think within the next, you know, 30 to 90 days, making that second ask. Now, that is sort of predicated upon the fact that you did a really good job thanking them. Maybe you have sent them some impact stories that tells them that, hey, this is kind of the kind of impact you're going to have as a donor. We're so grateful to have you as part of the family. You know, you're a first-time donor. We're happy to have you. Maybe you've sent them a survey that maybe you've learned something about that donor. But strike while the iron is hot. You know, there is kind of that honeymoon period after that first donation that don't be afraid to ask within 90 days for that second donation, because all the research says, especially the fundraising effectiveness research, that if you get a second gift from a first-time donor, the retention rate's more than double, because first-time donor retention rates are really, really low if you haven't followed that research. But if you can get that second gift, regardless of the gift amount, right? I'm not saying you have to go out and get an upgrade or a significant, you know, dollar amount necessarily, but get that second gift from those first-time donors, especially if they gave it year-end. You know, there's no reason really to wait until next winter, next December, next year end to ask those people again if you've gotten only one gift from them.
Interesting. Stephen, and I know you wrote a blog post right during the holiday season. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, the secret shopping one, you mean?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So I like to kind of creep on people a little bit. This is something that I've done for the past, I think, 5 years, where I will pick a city or a certain sort of cohort of random nonprofits, and I will give to them as a first-time donor just to kind of see what they do, how they treat me, what they send me, you know, how their sort of donation forms are set up, all kinds of things. And
this is the classic secret shopper.
Yeah, but this year,
for those nonprofits out there, if you get a gift from Stephen,
that's the
next 5 minutes that we're talking.
Right, I might want to change the name and come up with a pseudonym so they don't recognize me. Yeah, my name is going to be it's going to carry some weight here if I keep doing this. But what I did last time, the one you're referring to, is I focused on Giving Tuesday specifically. You know, Giving Tuesday has become this juggernaut. It seems to just completely overwhelm the sector for, you know, a couple weeks out of the year, you know, for good or bad. I don't know if you want to talk about that or really if I'm qualified to make a judgment on there. I don't really want to make a judgment, but I'm always curious how people treat these online days of giving. So what I did last Giving Tuesday about a month ago is I went to all of the nonprofits that I give to monthly. So I'm not a new donor to these organizations. They know me, they should know me. And what I wanted to do is see if they would do anything different if I gave them an extra sort of 13th gift on Giving Tuesday, right? It's sort of a significant signal, right? I'm a monthly donor. They've got my credit card information. They withdraw it every month. And here I am on this major day of giving, making an extra, you know, one-time gift in addition to that monthly commitment. So I kind of wanted to see, would they do anything extra for me? Would they recognize that? Would they say, hey, Stephen, you're a monthly donor. You know, we noticed you also gave on Giving Tuesday. That's awesome. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it. You know, you went above and beyond. So I was kind of looking to see if they would kind of mention those signals. And you can read my full sort of research write-up on it. But the long and short of it is that no one really did that. It was a lot of sort of the automatic, you know, receipts that you would get from the online donation form and kind of that, you know, standard letter. But no one really went and said, hey, you did something that was sort of extra and above and beyond. And for pretty much all of my little giving experiments, very, very few people do anything like that, right? And I think sometimes we spend so much time trying to like create campaigns and do Giving Tuesday, and we spend so much time planning social media updates and emails and all these things that we forget, oh, people are donating and we need to spend as much time, if not more time, with the follow-up. And we also need to recognize, and this is what I'm probably most passionate about, that all of our donors are different, right? They give for different reasons. They give different amounts and frequencies and recencies. And sometimes we miss, you know, maybe going back to kind of the database and the software discussion, it's hard to sometimes see those signals. You know, a bunch of people giving on Giving Tuesday, that just looks like online gifts. But are we looking for people who gave their first gift on Giving Tuesday? Are we looking at people who, you know, maybe made an annual gift from the year-end appeal and also gave on Giving Tuesday? Are we looking for people who are monthly givers and also gave on Giving Tuesday? And segmenting our donors and looking for those kind of different types of you know, buckets of donors, if that's the right word, and communicating to them differently is something that I'm really passionate about. And at least the Boomerang customers who do that, they're the successful ones. The people who have lots of different segments built in their database, they have lots of different thank you letter templates that they can personalize even further when they are sending them out to different types of donors. Like, I think that's how you win in 2019 and beyond, right? I don't think it's not having a piece of software that's just, you know, smoking gun for you, but it's kind of using technology to do really personal stewardship that is contextualized and personalized for the recipient that you're sending it to, rather than just sending the same thank you letter to everyone who gave on Giving Tuesday, regardless of what type of donor they are and what they gave and how often they give. I think that's really what makes organizations more successful than others, is the ability to treat your donors like, you know, the unique snowflakes that they are. People are different donors. You know, two $5 donors, you can tell completely different stories to those people, even though they may show up on paper or in our databases as kind of the same type of donor, and rarely are they.
That's a great point. I think what I love about what you said is that it's intensely focused on those who have already given to the organization, already expressed passion for the mission. So many organizations out there are focused on how do I acquire new donors, or I need to push my board members to introduce me to new people. And in a land of finite resources and finite time, what I hear you saying is that perhaps your time might be better spent getting to know even better and personalizing the donor experience for those who have already given to the organization.
For sure. And I'm not saying that totally stop your acquisition efforts. You know, that's not a good idea either. But we are sort of stuck on this treadmill, right? We're acquiring new donors all the time because we're losing so many donors. I mean, the Fundraising Effectiveness Project research that comes out every year, you know, we're at 45% retention rate on average in the sector. So we're losing more than half of our donors every single year. So of course we're in this acquisition mindset. So you kind of have to, you know, take one foot off the treadmill and keep the acquisition going while doing stewardship for the people that you already have, because, you know, the cost to renew a donor is so much lower than the cost to acquire a donor. So focus on the people you have. And I think you nailed it exactly, Gregory, when you kind of touched on getting to know the donors. Like that's a piece we miss. Like stewardship is one thing and thanking donors, and that's all really good. But getting to know them is different, right? We sometimes, I think, lack a curiosity maybe about our donors.
Great point.
You know, people are, they're giving to us, they're giving their money when they don't have to, right? They could be spending that on entertainment or groceries or saving it or whatever, that there's something going on there. And I think the more that we try to learn about our donors, and it could be as simple as an electronic survey, you know, something really simple like, hey, thanks for making your first donation to us. By the way, who are you? We don't know you, right? This is your first donation. You know, imagine if you got a birthday present in the mail from a total stranger. Like, wouldn't you want to know like what's going on there? You might be a little curious about that, but that doesn't always sort of transition to our donors. So asking them like, how did you hear about us? What's your connection to the cause? I think is like a golden question, because you may get two donors that each give $100, and conventional wisdom, most people would put them into the $100 donor bucket, right? But I would recommend, hey, let's send those people a survey or call them and say thank you and learn something about them, because you may put those $200 donors into different buckets, even though they both gave $100, because one might have given because they had a grandparent who died of Alzheimer's, and that's why they're donating to your Alzheimer's organization. And the other $100 donor may have been giving to a friend of theirs who was doing a peer-to-peer fundraiser, right? Those are two very, very different types of donors, even though they both gave the same dollar amount, even though they both made their first donation. And so often we put people into like the donor value pyramid rather than maybe the donor motivation pyramid or buckets, right? Or the kind of the level of intimacy they have with the organization. So one thing we tell Bloomerang customers, and we tell everybody this honestly, is be curious about your donors, because it will guide your efforts going forward. You don't have to wonder which story should I tell, you know, which type of appeal should I make to them, you know, which case should I make. Ask them questions. And donors really like to be asked questions. There's a lot of research out there that shows, I'm thinking of a study from the Donor Voice specifically, where they found, I think it was the number four donor engagement signal was that the organization asked them for feedback, right?
And I think that listening, you know, just in working with organizations, working with fundraisers, professional fundraisers and also board members, we focus an awful lot on their ability to make a case and advocate for the organization. Listening is such an underrated skill when it comes to fundraisers.
It totally guides your efforts, right? I mean, you don't have to wonder about what you should be communicating to. And people give for different reasons. Like, so let's say you're a conservation organization, and World Wildlife Fund, they do a great job of this. They have this new welcome kit where they cover a lot of different areas of conservation. There's, you know, animals, and there's different, you know, types of biomes, there's forests and oceans. And they ask new donors, what are you passionate about? Are you passionate about the rainforest? Are you passionate about, you know, ocean life? And they get answers to those questions. And by the way, it makes the donor feel really good because it shows that the organization is curious about them. And then guess what? They get put on those segmented communications based on their interest. So there is so much you can gain from asking your donors questions and listening to their feedback and soliciting feedback. You don't have to wonder what it is we should be talking to people about. And so often we do. We cram every single thing into our newsletters, and our appeals are sort of non-specific because we want to try to cover everything that the organization does. But imagine getting an appeal letter, you know, dear Stephen, you know, we know that you firsthand have experienced Alzheimer's, right? And if you can kind of lead with that story and make that sort of personal hook right off the bat, you're going to be more effective in your communications than trying to be all things to all people.
It would seem to me that this is an area where technology can be a partner for an organization. Yes. Can be a partner, because as you're listening, as you're accumulating this information, you need some place to put it that's accessible to others within the organization.
Right. The accessibility is key. You know, so often the person running the database is maybe the lowest paid employee. It's the person that doesn't want to run the database, but maybe they got roped into it. And if you're trying to track all these things, like, you know, if someone has a conversation with a donor, or if they see them at the event, collecting that information can be really difficult if it's siloed, right? And no one listening to this would probably argue that often nonprofit organizations are siloed. So we recommend, hey, give a lot of people access to the database. And we sometimes get pushback on that, about, you know, privacy. You know, we don't want certain employees to know things about our donors. And we say, well, you know, you should trust your employees. They should all be invested in the mission. They should all be interacting with your constituents. And if you trust your people, you're going to be able to collect more of that information and have more robust profiles about the people who support you and not miss anything. Jay actually tells a story. He doesn't mind me saying this. He is a major donor to Butler University here in Indianapolis. He went there. He's the biggest like Butler basketball fan ever. And he's an alumni. He played basketball there, and he got invited out to dinner from a major gift officer at the university. And it was a new MGO, and that person didn't know all this history with Jay. So at the beginning of the conversation started off like, you know, Jay, tell me how, you know, what your connection to Butler is. And it really kind of offended him as a major donor and as alumni. It's like, you should know this information. And I know it's because the data got siloed. Then maybe there were user permissions where that MGO couldn't get into it and see the profile, or the notes weren't updated. So, you know, data can really be your friend, but it can also really, really hurt you if you're not keeping these things up to date and if you're not making them accessible to all the people in your organization.
That's a great point. Stephen, before we wrap up, one of the questions I like to ask guests on the podcast is, if you could go back and talk to the Stephen Shattuck who was just starting out in his nonprofit journey, what do you know now that you wish you knew back then?
Wow. Probably that there's no piece of technology that's a smoking gun or a silver bullet. Like, you know, I'm a millennial, I'm 34. So, you know, 23-year-old Stephen was, oh man, you know, social media is going to revolutionize everything. Like, nonprofits should stop what they're doing and get on Facebook and all these things. And don't get too excited. I mean, there's a lot of really cool, useful stuff out there that you should, you know, at least check out. And early adoption is often rewarded when it comes to technology, but don't lose focus on what always has worked and probably what always will work, is just, you know, the things we've been saying, the personal connection, building relationships, getting to know your people. Every piece of technology should service those things rather than sort of replace them or do something else besides those things.
Stephen, I really appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom with our listeners today. If folks want to get more information about Bloomerang and about the solution and services that you offer, how can they get in touch with you or with the company?
Yeah, just check us out on our website. It's just bloomerang.co. You can see, you know, video demonstrations of our software. You can look at those things without having to talk to someone right away if you don't want to. Free blog, free webinar series, lots of ebooks, downloadables, templates, pretty robust content library. If you're struggling with some specific aspect of fundraising, I'm pretty sure we have at least one resource for you that may get you over the hump. So check out our website. There's a lot of good stuff on there that I think will be helpful to you.
I will second that as well. Whether you're a Bloomerang customer or not, I encourage you to check out the website, because some fantastic blogs, posts that I enjoy reading, and other materials on the website that really can aid nonprofit leaders and organizations in the area of fundraising. Stephen, I want to thank you so much for your time, taking the time to talk with us today and share your thoughts and your wisdom with our listeners.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
And this has been Gregory Nielsen with Nonprofit Vision. If you're interested in learning more about Nielsen Training and Consulting and the services that we provide for nonprofit leaders and organizations, please visit our website at www.nielsenconsults.com. That's NIELSEN consults.com. Thank you very much.